Since I was in elementary school, I started drawing on computers, built my first website at the age of 12, started my real estate career at 17, and continue to help businesses grow through online marketing and graphic design. I want to teach people about my two passions of real estate and marketing. My name is Hayden Gershner, and you're listening to the Remarketable Podcast.
Hey, 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 it's time for another episode of the Remarketable Podcast. I'm your host, Hayden Gershner, and if this is your first time listening, every week we bring you three episodes. Every Monday, like today, we bring you a real estate-related episode. Wednesdays, we have something actionable, something that you can do to help you personally or in your business, preferably business. We all know we want to be more productive. And then every Friday, we give you something for the marketing industry, whether you are in a marketing firm, whether you're in a marketing position, or whether you just want to learn how to better market your company. All these episodes are completely unscripted, unedited, so I apologize for any mistakes I might have. If anything, I do have a bullet point list just to kind of help me stay on track. So with this episode, I know a lot of my early real estate episodes were based primarily around investing in real estate investments. So this one is going to be for home buyers. So whether this is your first time buying a home, whether you've bought a home before, but it's been a couple of years, you don't really remember how, or maybe you're looking to become a realtor and you don't really know the proper process because let's be honest here. If you're an agent, if you just got your license, the only thing you know how to do is how not to get arrested. And if you're listening and you're not a realtor, this is the truth. Going through the whole process, they don't teach you anything except the legal stuff. They don't teach you how to write a contract. They don't teach you how to work with title companies or anything. They don't teach you anything. Luckily, I worked under a firm for 2 years before I got my license. But anyways, I am licensed here in the state of Texas, as I think I said in the intro. So everything may be a little different for where you're at, but basically everything I'm going to be going over is standard, at least here. So and I'm going to go in order for every step. So if you want to take notes, go ahead. The first thing you want to do is work with a lender. So a mortgage lender will be your best friend. Now, if you are a cash buyer, if you're going to buy in cash, that's perfectly fine. First thing you want to do is get a proof of funds letter. This is a letter from the bank showing that you have the amount of money to purchase the house that you want. So working with a lender, I highly, highly, highly recommend working with a local lender. I don't mean like the local Chase mortgage lender. I mean like your local credit union, something like that. So like here in Wichita Falls, I highly recommend my clients to go with American National Bank or First National Bank. Those two are big. The reason behind this is because localized it makes it so much easier when it comes to getting your loans. Everything is in-house, so everybody, like in the underwriting department, all the people that work through all the paperwork, everybody is there locally. And your lender, unlike with these big banks, they will give you their personal cell phone number and you can call, text them anytime, including weekends. So if you have any questions that come up, you can have them at just a simple, a click of your finger instead of a button now. It'll just make the process so much easier. And you don't have to work. This is a big myth. You do not have to work with the bank that you currently bank at. You can go to any other bank. And as long as you are honest with all your history, then you should be perfectly fine. So when you go to work with a lender, there are going to be different types of loans that you can get. The typical ones are you have conventional, you have FHA, and you have VA. I'm going to break those down. So conventional is the typical one. Anybody can really get one of these. The only difference is it kind of acts more like cash because there's not a bunch of regulations on the houses that you can get. So you can pretty much get any house. This is what a lot of lender or investors use whenever they don't have any sort of private money or anything like that. So there is also a higher down payment for these. Usually, again, I'm not a licensed lender. I'm not a mortgage lender. I'm not an insurance agent. I don't work at a title company. I'm not an escrow officer. I'm just a licensed realtor. Typically, it's like 20% down for a conventional loan. Now, you have VA loans. Those are for Veteran Affairs. So if you're an active duty service, you know, in the military, or if you're just a veteran, you can get one of these loans. Now, these loans are fantastic because you can get a home zero down, and you can get it with zero closing costs, where the lender pretty much asks for the seller to pay for your closing cost. They are awesome. And of course, mortgage rates, they change all the time. So I could tell you right now what they are, but they'd be totally different by the time this episode comes out. So they're relatively really good. Then you also have FHA loans, which are federally backed. So they're, along with VA, there's higher regulations on the type of house you can get. So with a VA loan, they're better than conventional in the sense that you don't have to put as much down. It's usually around 3%, 3 to 6%, something like that. And you do have another thing called a PMI, which is just a mortgage insurance. Now that is usually about 1% of the price of the loan, and they change these rules all the time, so it could be different. So with that, you want to talk with your lender about the type of loan you can get, and credit score. So this is another thing a lot of people ask about. Again, this is different depending on your bank, and I'm not a mortgage lender. So a lot of banks, they really look for a 680 or 620, sorry, 620 credit score is about the lowest that they'll take. Anything higher is fantastic. Now there are some that work with like a 570, 580, but the lower your credit score, the higher interest rate typically will be, or the higher down payment you'll need. So you want to keep that in mind. And if you have credit issues, talk with your lender about credit repair people. They will recommend you to a good one. There's lots of them out there. So you want to make sure that you're working with one that they will recommend, not one that they're going to get a bonus out of. So you want to check with those. Once you get that, you want to ask, you want to make sure you get pre-qualified or a pre-approval. So a pre-qualification is where you just go off the top of your head telling them about a basic amount of how much you make, about how much money you have set aside, about how many active loans you have out there, about what you think your credit score is, and they can give you about how much of a home loan you can get. So that's what a lot of people get initially. Now you can also get a pre-approval. Pre-approval loan is more in depth. That is where they will ask for your payment stubs. They will ask for like actual bank loan letters from like your car loan, all that kind of stuff. They ask for a lot more paperwork. That process takes anywhere from 3 days to a couple weeks. It really just depends on how much information they need to pull. And that gives you a more accurate number of the amount you can get on a home. So the reason why you want to do all this before you look at a house, if it isn't, apparent already, is because you want to make sure what type of house you can get and how much you can afford before you go looking at houses. That way you save a lot of time. And it's not like buying a car where you go find the perfect car and then you go and get a loan for it. It's the complete opposite. And this will save you so much time and will also save the realtor a lot of headache as well, because I can't tell you the biggest headache other than just showing somebody a million houses only to find out that they can't get a loan, or find out that they've been looking in the wrong price range. They've been looking at houses that are too expensive, or they go and find the perfect house and they can't get their approval in time and somebody else buys the house. That can happen. So this is why you want to do this first, so you don't fall in love with other houses and can't get the loan in time. So once you get that all taken care of, then you want to work with a realtor. Now, real estate agents, as a buyer, of course, this will depend on your area, but I have never ever seen this. Back in the 80s, they could get this would be typical where you would pay an agent to show you houses and everything. But now, as far as I've seen it, I've never heard personally of another realtor doing this. But a realtor, they only get paid as a buyer, working with a buyer, they only get paid from the seller that pays the seller, the listing broker that then pays the buyer's broker that then pays the buyer. I have another episode out over commissions, how they get paid. So essentially, as a buyer, you're not paying the realtor directly. They get paid from the seller at closing. So that also means do not abuse them. Do not have them show you a million houses. And, you know, I'm just going off the top of my head here. So With that, you want to make sure that's clear the criteria you are looking for in a home. And you don't want to be using Zillow while you're working with a realtor. This is a big no-no. The reason behind this is, of course, back in the 80s and 90s, and of course, way before then, realtors had a big book, and that was the MLS back then, the Multiple Listing Service. And that had all the houses around the market, and only realtors had access to that. So you had, back then, I kind of wish I was a realtor back then, because back then you would have to go into a real estate office just to find out what houses were on the market. But now you can go on Zillow and find out all that kind of stuff. The reason I'm saying this is because Zillow only shows houses that, sorry, my computer froze for a second. I hope that didn't have any disturbance. Zillow only shows houses that, of course, are on the market, but they will also show houses that have already sold or that are in contract, but they do not update it on there. Sometimes the agent themselves has to go in there and do it manually, and they won't remember because they do everything through the MLS. So realtors can see things from the MLS before it happens on Zillow or Trulia, which are owned by the same company, and Realtor.com, which honestly is not. They're owned by like some newspaper. I can't remember what newspaper exactly. But you know where I'm getting at. So the main job of those sites like Zillow, Realtor.com, Trulia, their job isn't to help you as a home buyer. Their job is to use you as currency for realtors. Because as a realtor, I don't do this anymore because, like I said, I own a marketing company. I do all my own marketing. As a realtor, they would pay anywhere from a couple hundred to a couple $1,000 a month just for the chance of you to ask to look or ask for information on a house. But they're also fighting with like four other different realtors. So those realtors that you see on Zillow do not list that home. You'll see one of them will say listing agent. That's the agent that owns that has the home listed. And with that also being said, a realtor can show you any other house that any other agent or any other brokerage has on the market. There's this big misconception that they can only show you houses that they have listed. That cannot be further from the truth. Not to confuse anybody, but when you go to list a home, you can have the option to have certain brokerages or certain realtors not work with the buyer's side of the home. And that can just be if they had bad experience there. They think that that other broker or other realtor is a swindler or something. Then that, but that's very, 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 very rare. I know it's possible. I have personally never seen it happen. That's why I say it's very rare. I only bring it up just so you guys are aware. I just want to be as transparent as possible. So with all those Zillow sites and everything, like I said, and also if you do that and you go looking at another house with another realtor, that's just the biggest backstab you could possibly do. And it, before you even get into that, you want to make sure that the realtor you're working with is somebody that you know, like, and trust. Of course, you might not know them if you're moving into the area, but you want to make sure you can like and trust this person. You want to make sure that you can click easily, because I've worked with people that after I've shown them like one or two houses, I'm like, we're not going to be a good fit because our personalities aren't clicking that well. So I usually recommend them to work with another realtor. I don't really say, you know, hey, our personalities aren't working. Go work with this person. I don't like you as a person. I don't say that, of course. I just say, hey, I've got a lot of other things going on. I don't want to be a disservice to you, not, you know, provide the full value that I can to you. So I'm going to let this other agent take care of that for you. So that's typically what I do. So you want to do the same thing with an agent. You don't want to go look at a million houses with them and then go with another agent and buy another house and never tell that other agent and they have to find out that way. That is the worst thing possible. Trust me, it is. And if you find out like how we get paid in my previous episode, then you'll kind of understand why. Because yeah, realtors don't get paid as much as most people think. The only ones that really make it are the ones that are selling 5+ houses a month that are over average price. So you want to make sure you're doing that. Now, most realtors won't ask for you to sign a buyer's agreement, but some will. I only have my clients sign a buyer's agreement when we go to put a contract in on a house. That way, they know that I have a fiduciary duty. That means that I am going to act in their best interest. So I am going to put their interest above mine. So I'm not going to try to get the most price out of the house so I can get the biggest amount of commission. I'm going to make sure that they get the best value possible. So what that means is when it comes to looking at prices on homes. This is how I do it. Not every agent does this. I would say ask your agent to do some of this stuff if possible. So what I do when I find out the criteria of my buyers, I get a whole list of all the houses that match that criteria. Then before setting up any appointments or showing them to my clients, what I do is I go through and see if possible, if I sometimes you can't see it, I go to see when the last time the seller bought the home, when they bought it, how long they've owned it, about how much they paid for it, and if possible, what kind of loan they got. That way I can do math and see, you know, what the average interest rate was at that time and kind of get an idea of how much they have left owed on the home. That way, when we put in an offer, I can say, hey, we can go here, but this is the bottom line, because if we go this far, because I equate the realtor commission and seller and closing costs and all that, this is as far down as we can go where the seller can still walk away with a profit, because I don't want to make a losing situation for anybody. I want to make it a win-win as much as possible. So I do that. I also pull up a comp, which is a comparable comparable houses or CMA comparable market analysis, and that pretty much just looks at all the other houses in the neighborhood to see what they're selling for versus this house, so I can make sure that the house is listed properly so we can put in a good offer amount. You want to make sure your agent's doing that as well to make sure that they're staying in the budget. And when you go to look at houses, typically within the first 5 to 10 houses, you'll find your perfect one right there if your agent is doing what you know I'm doing to make sure that it's the perfect home that lines up for what you're looking for. And again, another reason to do this through better than going on Zillow is because sometimes when a house, their price changes, the price changes on the home, it won't update on there. Also, realtors can find out way more information on MLS about a house than they can on than you can on Zillow. So that's just a little bit more on that. You also want to work with, you know, an insurance company because you're going to get homeowner's insurance. What I recommend is, just like with the lenders, local insurance agents, local insurance brokers, I should say, ones that are brokered out for more than one company. The reason behind this is there's a company here in town, and I'm not paid for any of this, of course, because you guys can be listening from anywhere, but Pulley Insurance is one that I work with here, and they are phenomenal. They are brokered out with like 10 different insurance companies. And the reason behind this is they can go and see, out of all these companies, which one can give you the best value for your homeowner's insurance. Another thing they can do, this is why you want to do it before you go into the home buying process. They can go and you can say, hey, I'm thinking about buying this home. Can you see if there's been any liens pulled on this property? That way, or any like accidents or something, like there was hail damage and they took out an insurance claim. And they got a check for it, but they didn't use the check towards the property, and now there's a lien on it. You want to find out all that information so the insurance agent can do that for you ahead of time. Now, not every insurance agent is going to do this just out of the goodness of their heart. They're going to want to make sure that you're working with them when this happens and all that. So everyone's different. So that's just one of the things I recommend, is to do that ahead of time. I want to. This way, it saves you as much headache as possible when it comes into buying the house, so there's no unforeseen things that come up. It's just so, because as a realtor, it's our job to make sure that we can jump through as many hurdles as possible. Another thing is before you put in the offer, is to look twice at a property. There's a thing called the second showing. Second showing is the golden ticket. It's the make it or break it deal. It's the golden ticket to sellers, I should say. After a couple days, maybe a week, after you've looked at all the houses, take another look through the top ones that you have narrowed down, because you're going in with fresh eyes. You've already seen what you wanted to see. Now your brain is going to pick up the things that you might not want to see, which are anything that could be wrong with the property. If there's leaks, if there's cracks, if there's stains, I don't know, something wrong with it. And you don't want to look at the negatives, but you want to look for those things just so you can put it into the negotiation process. So once you get that, once you find the perfect house, once you've got down a good price, then you want to start doing the offer. You want to present the offer. Now, the realtor does all this. They can walk you through it. Every state's different on how they do all this. But you want to put in your pre-approval, pre-qualification letter. Now, let's say you're going to buy a house that's $150,000. You're pre-approved for $175,000. You don't want a pre-approval letter that says $175,000 going to the realtor of the $150,000 home or the $150,000 negotiated price home. Because then they're going to be, oh, they can afford way more. Let's negotiate back, counteroffer at this higher price. So you want to make sure to tell your lender, hey, I'm going to put an offer on a home. This is how much we're offering. Can I get a pre-approval for this amount? And then they'll send it over, and then you can put it in with the contract or the offer, or your realtor will. Next, in the contract, of course, you got pricing. You want to put in earnest money. Earnest money, now this isn't required, but I think that there isn't a single seller that would take an offer without earnest money. Earnest money acts like a security deposit whenever you get in a lease. So earnest money, like the name and title, or, you know, I need a dictionary today. Like the name suggests, it shows that you are earnest in buying the home. It's in our area, it ranges anywhere from $500 to $1,000. And this goes straight to the title company. And you get receipted on all these things, so you know where your money's going. But anyways, the earnest money, like I said, it acts like a security deposit. Now, that can be credited as closing costs. So it's not like you're losing the money. It's not like you just paid $500 for nothing. That can go towards your closing cost. Another thing you want to look for is if there's any repairs, like I said in the second show, and you want to put that in the contract to see if they will fix anything. Another thing you can ask for is if there's any sort of things and the home you want to stay, like any sort of appliances, any sort of furniture you might want. Now, I'm not saying make it like a whole shopping spree, but there's an addendum that you can have or an amendment, and it says that for this certain amount, like you want to say, like for an extra $100 separately, I want you to leave this TV or whatever. With that being said, that there's things that are attached to the property. So anything that had to be fixed to the property, like they had to screw into the wall, something like a wall-mounted TV, something like built-in speakers, those legally stay with the home unless specified in the contract. Just to keep that in mind. So if there's anything like that, you want to put it in, any repairs you want made, you want to put that in there as well. Then there's another thing called option. There's an option money. Here, of course, it's different everywhere you're at. Here is typically $50 to $100. And this gives you the option for however long you want. Usually it's 7 to 10 days. If it's any longer, then it just seems really greedy. Unless if you are in a contingency, which a contingency is for a whole different video or a whole different podcast episode. So that gives you the option to back out of the contract within that amount of given time, any amount of given time of the 7 to 10 days. So for whatever reason, you don't want to buy the house anymore, you can back out of it. Otherwise, you're locked into the contract. So this is why you really want to do one of these. Now, the $50 or $100, that gets taken to the homeowners, the sellers, and they hold on to that. And then if you go through with buying the home, that can be credited back into a separate check. So you can get like $50 or $100 back in a check when you close on the home, or it can go towards the closing costs for the sale price. So all that can be, you know, worked out in the contract. The main reason why you want one of that too, not only so you can back out, but also in you can use it as a negotiating tool or negotiating tactic. So if there's some repairs that are, you know, are taking a little bit too long to be done or something like that, or in the case of an inspector, which I'm going to go more into depth on this in a second, but if you get an inspection on the home and there's some stuff that needs to be fixed that you want to be fixed before you close on the home, then you can use that as another negotiating tactic. So you can renegotiate the contract pretty much at any time, as long as you got the option period. So you can make sure, you can say, hey, I still have the option period. I can sell the option to back out. I want to make sure these things are going to get fixed, or else I'm going to back out, and then you're going to have the home sit on the market longer. But getting into all that, so you also have a home warranty. So a home warranty, again, I'm not paid for any of this. Old Republic, Home Warranty of America, those are usually the big ones we work with. It can be anywhere from like $400 to $800. It really depends. There's a lot of factors. If you have a pool, if you have a certain square footage size house, all that kind of stuff. The reason why you'd want a home warranty, this is not like a must. The reason why you would want a home warranty is if anything was to go wrong with the property, in the sense of like anything appliance-wise, because that really helps out, because your homeowner's insurance is more like disaster type things. With a home warranty, this can save you so much. I've had a homeowner, they bought a house with a pool, and the pool pump went out, and at the same time they also had their dishwasher go out. Both of that kind of has to do with plumbing. So the home warranty company, they paid them a service fee of $60, and they got a brand new pool pump. They got the dishwasher fixed all at the same time for just $60. That saved them so much money, in the same sense that you would, you know, pay out way much more to have that done yourself. Now, keep this in mind. If you have a home warranty, and if something happens to your home that's covered under the home warranty, do not, I repeat, do not call out the service providers yourself. The home warranty company will not cover for that. You will have to pay that out of pocket. You want to call the home warranty company and make a service request from to them directly, and they will call out the people to do it. They'll say, okay, we have this Bob Joe's Plumbing, whatever. They're going to be coming out to your house, or, you know, like Frank's Electric. They're the ones coming out to your property. So you want to keep that in mind. And then there's also closing time. So depending on the type of loan you get, if you're going cash, you can close on a home in as little as 2 weeks. If you're going with a loan, it could be anywhere from 30 to 45 days. That's the typical average. Of course, if you have somebody that's the seller and they're taking a while to move out, then that kind of an effect with it. So this is why I also say working with local lenders is really great, because I've worked with some people that insisted on using their big lenders, and they took forever to get back with anybody. And it was the biggest headache ever. And we had to extend closing where these people, they didn't close on their home for almost 2 to 3 months in some instances. So that's why you want to make sure with local lenders. But just to give you an idea, it takes about 30 to 45 days on average to close on a home. Another thing to look out for, there's something called intermediary. So an intermediary means that the realtor that you're working with either lists the home or his brokerage lists the home. So you'll have an intermediary clause which states that this realtor is working with they have like a relationship with the sellers in a sense. So that just gives you a heads up, like, hey, this person works with the person you're buying the home for as well. And that can give you the option, like, hey, this agent might, you know, stab my back, which typically they won't. They won't. Like, there's over 400 agents here in my local town, and there's maybe only 3 that I know of that would do something like that. It's very rare. But like I said, you want to, you know, make sure that you're working with a good agent. So that's just another step that might be in there. So getting back to inspection. So once you've got the approval, or once you've got a contract approved and everybody signed off on it, and you are in contract with the home, then it's time to set up an inspection. So an inspection is not a mandatory thing. It's not something you have to have, but it's something that is highly, highly, highly encouraged and recommended. So an inspection here in my town, they can range anywhere from $300 to $600. Again, it's like a home warranty where it depends if you have any extra outbuildings or pools that need to be inspected, or if you have termites, which sometimes with VA loans, they'll need a termite inspection done regardless. So that can kind of go into your cost. Now, if you want to save some money on a homeowner's inspection or home inspection, one of the things you can do is get some free estimates from service providers. So say you want to check out the electrical, you get an electrician. You want to check out plumbing, you get a plumber. You want to check out the roof, you get a roofer. You get all those people to get out and give bids, and to say, hey, if there's something wrong here, that way you can say, hey, let's get this fixed. Or if you're somebody that's looking at a fixer-upper, I've had some people do this as well. Let's say there is sorry, my computer likes to turn off on me regularly. Let's say that you want some repairs to be done on the home, and this doesn't have anything to do with the sellers. This has everything to do with you making the repairs when you move in. So you can have these service providers give out estimates to you and say, hey, it's going to cost this much to do the roof and all that kind of stuff. Well, you can take it to your bank, and this, of course, depends on your bank and the type of loan you're getting. You can have it where they can roll in the cost of those repairs into it, so then essentially that becomes part of the loan. So now your roof, you're paying off on it on top of your mortgage, and that way you don't have to be out of pocket when it comes to those other big repairs. Again, talk with your lender, make sure that's something that you can work with. But also that gives you, you know, it's a free way to kind of get an idea if there's any major repairs that need to be done that you can also negotiate, you know, on that second negotiation round for anything that needs to be taken care of. Now, there's another thing. When you get closer to closing, the bank is going to hire out an appraiser to do an appraisal of the property. So this appraiser, if you're with VA or FHA loan, they will look for anything that could stop you from getting that loan, and that will go into anything that might need to be fixed. So for instance, like VA, if you have a home, if you're going to buy a home with a VA loan and the home is built before 1978 and there's any peeling paint on the exterior of the property, it will have to be repainted before you can buy that house, because there could be a possibility of lead-based paint that's chipping off that could be hazardous. That's the reason. There's other things, like if there's a window pane that's broken, they have a whole list of stuff. This is why it's important to make sure what type of loan you're getting before you go to buy a house. So the appraiser will go out. Now, the bank does not have direct contact with the person doing the appraisal. They only get the appraisal back when the appraiser's done appraising the house, which can take a couple days to a week. It really just depends. So the reason behind that is because back when the whole market crash thing happened in 2008, some lenders were being really good friends with these appraisers and trying to get the appraisals to go in their favor so they can get the type of loan they wanted. So that's why. So your realtor is the only person that has direct contact really with these appraisers. So that's pretty much it. Once you get done with all that and the negotiations are done, yeah, everything's to your liking, then it's time to go to the title company and close and get your keys and get into your new house. Now, usually you won't get the keys until everything's funded from the bank. So once everybody's got their checks, then you'll be able to get the keys and get into your house, unless specified, you know, in the contract differently. But that is essentially the entire home buying process from step A to step Z. So hopefully this was clear enough for you guys. If you have any other questions, just let me know. Again, I am only a licensed realtor in the state of Texas. So if you're in a different state, consult with a professional in your area. If you have any other episode recommendations, let me know. You can email me at Hayden@hgimm.com. That's H-G-I-M-M.com. Stands for High Growth and Media Marketing, my marketing company. If you want to find out more about who I am, you can visit my website, HaydenGerstner.com. That's HaydenGerstner.com. And like I say, the only thing I ask from you guys is to bring me one person, bring me a friend, somebody to get some value out of these out of these podcast episodes, whether they're in real estate, in marketing, or they're just looking to get more information in to these industries. Until next time, I'll talk to you guys later.